And joining us on Perspectives today are Ed and Christopher Lucas. And Ed and Christopher Lucas, let me tell you a little bit about them. Ed Lucas is an Emmy Award-winning broadcaster, and he's been covering pro sports since 1955. His work with the New York Yankees appears regularly on YES Network and other television and radio outlets. It can also be found in national magazines, online, and newspapers through his column, As I See It. He is a member of three different halls of fame. He travels the world as a motivational speaker for corporations, service groups, and schools. And he and his wife, Allison, live in New Jersey. And his son, Christopher, who is the co-author of this book, he is Ed's youngest son. He's an actor and an author who has appeared in many recurring and guest starring roles on TV and video games. He is also a New York City tour guide and a Disney historian. Christopher lives in New Jersey with his two young sons. So Ed and Chris, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And we are going to talk about the book Seeing Home, and that's the Ed Lucas story, a blind broadcaster story of overcoming life's greatest obstacles. Ed, let's start with you. First of all, tell us a little bit about your background. From reading this book, apparently you were very interested in baseball, even as a child.
That's correct. As a child, I loved baseball. My mother and father were big baseball fans. We went to the Jersey City Giants. They were a farm team of the New York Giants, and we couldn't afford to go to major league games. We lived in a housing project in Jersey City, so we went to many games to see the minor league club, and I got my love of the game from my parents and from going to the minor league clubs, and we didn't have a television for a long time, so I never saw anything on TV until around 1950. And my love for the game just grew and grew and grew.
If you don't mind sharing with us your story of growing up and also your vision impairment.
Yes. I was a premature baby. In those days, prematurity caused weakness of the eyes to a certain degree, too much oxygen. They found that later on. So I had sight, but not 20/20. And I loved the game. I loved playing the game all the time, and wore a wool uniform during the baseball season my uncle gave me, and I just wore that every day no matter how hot it was. And the day Bobby Thompson hit the home run, the shot heard around the world, October the 3rd, 1951, we watched it on 10-inch TV with my father. And when the Giants won the pennant, Bobby Thompson hitting the home run off of Ralph Branca, I was so excited, I grabbed my glove and I ran outside, and a bunch of guys got together just to play ball, and I was a left-handed pitcher, and I threw a pitch, and a line drive came back and hit me between the eyes, and that was the last thing I ever saw. I thought my life was over, and it was the end of the world. What could a blind person do? The only image I had of a blind person was someone standing on a corner with a tin cup and a cane begging, and I vowed I would never, never do that.
We are visiting with Ed and Chris Lucas, authors of Seeing Home, the Ed Lucas story, a blind broadcaster's story of overcoming life's greatest obstacles. Ed, as you mentioned, that's the only impression you had of a blind man is someone standing at the corner with a tin cup and a cane. You went to a school run by nuns, and we've heard stories about how tough those nuns could be on the students, but they got what they needed. And you had a similar experience, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us, about the time that it was snowing outside.
Well, the nuns, they were tough, but in a different way. I mean, academically as well, but we lived there from Sunday night to Friday afternoon. So I had to learn my way around, and it was the first time I was away from home. Didn't really know anyone there, and going around, putting my hands out, feeling the walls, and making sure I didn't walk into anything and anybody. And this nun who was, she was 5 feet tall. She was a giant. But she slapped my arm down. She said, "Eddie Lucas, we walk with our hands at our sides at all times." I said, "But sister, I'm blind. I can't see where I'm going." She said, "Isn't that a shame? We're all in the same boat here, so now pick up your oar and start rowing." And I made sure that I walked around with my hands at my side and learned how to get around, and before I knew it, I was running up and down steps, and she caught me one day running up the steps, and she said, "Eddie Lucas, what are you supposed to be doing on the steps?" I said, "Sister, walking." She said, "That's right. After you do your homework, write 500 times in Braille. I must walk up and down the steps at all times." So she taught me a good lesson.
One of the other the things that comes out in your book is when your dad, I guess, went to go pick you up, and it was snowing outside, and he tried to explain to the sister that my son is blind.
Right.
Tell us how the sister responded.
Well, it was a Friday afternoon. He came to pick me up, and it was snowing out. It was about 12 inches already, and they expected another half a foot by midnight. And so he brought my galoshes. And when I came down to wave with my suitcase, he said, Ed, you have to put your galoshes on because we have a foot of snow outside already. I said, okay. So he said, you stand up against the wall, and I'll kneel down here. And you push one way, I'll push another way, and, you know, we'll put them on. So while we're doing that, the sister I was magnoring gets off the elevator and comes and turns the corner and sees my father. She yells, Mr. Lucas, what are you doing? So, oh, sister, he said, I don't know if you looked outside and saw the snow outside already, and I'm helping Ed put on his galoshes. She said, oh, she said, let me help you. And she went over and gave him an elbow in the chest and pushed him back and said, he's only blind. He's not handicapped. When he can put the galoshes on himself, you can leave. And an hour and a half later, we left.
Wow. Chris, tell us about some of those stories that, you know, your dad has shared. I'm sure that growing up with your dad, there were a lot of stories, that interesting stories that he could tell to you.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the great things about growing up with my dad, is that he is a storyteller. So, you know, we got a book out of it. We worked together on a book. But I recommend for everybody out there to sit down with your parents or your grandparents, and even if you've heard them a million times before, listen to their stories. There's a lot of wisdom there. But, you know, my dad's stories, I wouldn't even know where to begin with them. There's so many over the years. But the main lesson that you get out of all of them from my father is perseverance, never giving up, you know, getting through any obstacle, that anything is possible. And that's the greatest gift he's given me.
Now, Chris, when you were growing up with your father, some people might say, wow, how can you grow up with a father who is blind, or a mother who is in a wheelchair or whatever? And I would imagine that, you know, most people would have the attitude that some of these nuns had at your dad's school, saying, you know, because he's blind, he's not any less special. He's still my father, and he probably takes better care of me than your father, something I would have said probably.
And actually, I did say it quite a lot. It's the same thing. It's, you know, you can't control what happens to you in life or what situation you're in, especially when you're young. But what you can control is how you react to it, what you do. And that's another lesson my father's given me his whole life. So when people ask me that, they always say, what was it like growing up with a blind dad? It's kind of the same thing when you meet somebody who grew up in poverty, and people say, what was it like growing up poor? And the answer you almost always hear is, we didn't know we were poor. I didn't know till I got older that I realized, oh, something was different. That when I was growing up, my father made every effort. In fact, he went out of his way to make it seem like it was as normal as possible, that, you know, every kid had a blind dad. So yeah, I thank him for that, too.
Chris, tell us about, as I mentioned in the beginning of the interview, that you were also a Disney historian. How did you get interested in Disney? And tell us about, you know, what is a Disney historian?
Disney historian, actually, I wrote a one-man show about Walt Disney, and I go around and I kind of give the same lessons that's sort of similar to my father, where don't give up and keep moving forward and all these wonderful things that Mr. Disney did. So that's what I do as a Disney historian. But the love for that, actually, I have to thank my father for that too, because he used to take us every Saturday in Jersey City. We had this old movie palace, and they would have a Disney double feature. And my father would take my older brother and myself. He would take two buses. We would go there, and we'd watch the movies back to back. And the funniest story, which is in the book, is he took us one week to see Fantasia, which he didn't realize was all music, the whole thing straight through. And back then in the 70s, they didn't have 20 minutes of commercials and previews. It was just a little music played, and then the movie started. So about halfway through the movie, he leaned over and said, when's the movie going to start? And I said, Dad, it's been going on for a half hour. So for a blind man, he took us to what's essentially a silent movie for him.
We are visiting with Ed and Chris Lucas. They are the authors of Seeing Home, the Ed Lucas Story, a blind broadcaster's story of overcoming life's greatest obstacles. You were a broadcaster. I guess you once a broadcaster, always a broadcaster. So, Ed, tell us, when you were small, you were young, you mentioned that you wore that uniform that your uncle gave you all the time. Did you do some mock play-by-play?
I used to do mock play-by-play, sure. And I always wanted to be in baseball somehow. And when I lost my sight, I said I wanted to do something in radio or television or whatever. And I fought my way through, and when I go to the ball games, I listen to the game to hear what's going on, and I don't do play-by-play as such, but I do interviews and personal interviews and talk about things that most guys that interview ball players don't talk about, say their families or their growing up or some of the things that gave them a hard time as a kid or as a ball player, overcoming obstacles, and I do stories like that.
And one of the people who had a big impact in your life, on your life, is Hall of Famer Phil Rizzuto. Tell us about how he mentored you and some of the things that he shared with you.
Oh, if we have about 15 hours, we can do
okay.
that. But he really, my mother and father took me to the American Shop, which was a clothing store in Newark, and I met the Scooter for the first time there, and my mother must have told him what happened. I had an accident, and he came over and started talking baseball to me, and he said, hey, you're pretty knowledgeable. You know this, kid. He said, you know, you got to keep this up. He said, here's my phone number. Why don't you give me a call anytime you're down or you feel like talking baseball? He said, and we'll keep in touch. He said, when the season starts again, you come over to the game. And he said, I guess you can't give me your number. Your number's unlisted, right? So, of course, I gave him my phone number, and before I knew, Scooter started calling me and coming, taking me out and giving me pep talks and telling me, hey, listen, baseball's great, and, you know, you have to do it, but you also have to learn, you know, get a good education, learn how to do things, and keep your spirit up. Don't lose your spirit. Never give up. And that was one of the things that Scooter did. He would take me out for rides, and when I went to the ball games, he was there. And when I started, the press gave me a hard time. Most of the big-name press, if I mention their names, most people would know them. But they didn't want me around. What's this blind guy doing here? Why is he taking up so much space in the clubhouse talking in front of a locker to these guys when sighted guys could be doing it? And why is he taking up so much space in the press box and two seats for a guy that can't see what's going on? He has a guy that maybe doesn't know anything about baseball. And I went to Rizzuto and I said, Scooter, I don't know if I can put up with this. He said, listen, I told you years ago and I'm going to tell you now. Don't listen to these naysayers. Don't listen to what they say. They don't know what they're talking about. He said, you just continue. You have an education. You studied this. You know what you're doing. And remember, I told you, Casey Stengel told me that I was too small to play baseball when I tried out for the Brooklyn Dodgers and he was there. He said, go get yourself a shoeshine box and make a living. He said, I didn't listen to him, and you don't listen to them.
And you had, as you mentioned, a lot of conversations with the players, and they got personal with you. They told you about their families, lives. And when you met Joe DiMaggio, you were surprised that you thought you guys were going to talk baseball, and he threw you a curve, no pun intended.
Oh, yeah. Now, he was, you know, he said, if you're a friend of Scooter's, you know, you're a friend of mine. And we started talking. Hey, what kind of, you know, Italian meal do you like? And right away, the nun just appeared as Chef Boyardee. And so I said, oh, I love Chef Boyardee. Oh, give this boy a bowl of pasta fazzoli, he said. But Joe DiMaggio was wonderful to me through the years. No matter, anytime he came into the stadium and I was there, he'd come looking for me and always make sure he said hello and talk to me.
We are visiting with Ed and Chris Lucas, authors of Seen Home, The Ed Lucas Story, a blind broadcaster's story of overcoming life's greatest obstacles. Ed, we have been sharing stories about, you know, your family, and your son has also been talking about, you know, having you as a dad. But there was a difficult time, and I'm not sure if you want to talk about it or not, but when they wanted to take the children away from you because they said you were handicapped or disabled.
Oh, no, that's in the book, and it's something that, you know, I had my children, my ex-wife walked out and left me with the children, and then she came back and wanted custody of them, and before we could even have a trial, the judge said, listen, the court feels that it's better that your ex-wife have the children. Now, either you give them up and give them back to your ex-wife, or if you don't do that, then we will separate them and put them in separate foster homes, so this way they won't see each other or you won't be able to see them that often. So you have to make a decision. And I didn't want them to be in separate homes, so I told the judge that the court should give them back to my ex-wife. The lawyer I had, I got rid of was a lawyer from Jersey City that I was dismissed and found another lawyer who was a custody lawyer, Howard Danzik, and he came on and he took over and went to the appellate court of the state of New Jersey, and we finally had a trial, and I won the trial.
We are visiting with Ed and Chris Lucas, authors of Seen Home, The Ed Lucas Story, a blind broadcaster's story of overcoming life's greatest obstacles. Chris, let's talk about this book that you co-wrote with your father. At what point did you decide to put this into a story so that everybody could read about it?
Well, you know, it's funny because everybody asks that, how long does it take to write a book, to put it together? And in my head, I've been doing it for 45 years, but actually putting it on paper, it took about 3 or 4 months that I would sit down with him once a week. We knew we had 11 chapters to do, and we would go, you know, by whatever that chapter was, whatever the decade was or the time period or the focus, and I would ask him to tell stories. And I'd say about 80% of the stories didn't make the cut in the book, not because we didn't want them in there, but because we had to streamline the book. Otherwise, it'd be, you know, volumes and volumes of it. But it was a great process. So we were lucky enough that when we pitched the story, we get Simon & Schuster, a great publisher, came on board, and then they called us a couple of weeks later and said, there's a guy that just retired, he's getting into publishing, he wants to take the book and make it, and we thought, oh, great, you know, some guy just retired. They said, you might know him, his name is Derek Jeter. So Derek Jeter's first thing after baseball was to start a publishing company, and we were his first book, not specifically about Derek Jeter. So we got very fortunate, we were blessed that the timing was absolutely right. When we decided to do this book, we fell in with just the right people for it.
The book also has some great pictures of your father with great legends. And tell us a little bit about, you know, your friends must have been envious, I guess, the fact that who your father was and the fact that had access to all these great legends.
Well, you know, it was certainly an interesting way to grow up. I'll give it that much, that you're in school at one moment and you're reading about the President of the United States and you're driving to the ballpark and listening to Dolly Parton on the radio, and then you get there. And who is your dad having dinner with but the former President of the United States and Dolly Parton and all these other celebrities? As we say in the book, it's like being with my dad was like being on the couch in The Tonight Show, that you never knew from night to night who was going to be there and who was going to be around. I'd wake up in the morning and, you know, getting ready for school, they're having coffee in our kitchen is Phil Rizzuto and other famous, you know, ball players and celebrities. So it was a lot of fun. But again, when you're a kid, you don't realize. And when you get older, you say, wow, what kind of life was that? But you're just living moment to moment.
As you mentioned, you know, I was able to go to Oakland A's training camp in 1972 or one, I remember, when they had all the great ones like Reggie Jackson. They gave us bats and balls and gloves, and I don't know where they are now. And, you know, as a kid, you don't take it seriously enough, I guess, as you mentioned. But I'm sure that you have a lot of great things stored that your father passed on to you or they gave to your dad or the ballplayers shared with you.
I do, and it's a lot of the personal stuff. That's what it really means. You know, I'm not much of a big souvenir or memorabilia collector, but it's the little things, and you know, if a guy at the end of the season he was using a bat all season, today those bats would be, you know, thousands of dollars, and they'd put them on auction and online. Back then, guys would just come up to me or my brother and say, "Here you go, here, take, you know, thanks for being around all season," and they were family friends. That was the thing. It was my father's workplace, and it's the same thing about the book. People say, oh, it's a baseball book. Well, the backdrop is baseball. The story of the book is, you know, a great message about overcoming odds, and it's the same thing. When I was growing up, my father just happened to work in baseball. So when we would go there, it was the same as if, you know, you go to your parents' job and you meet their coworkers and their friends. It was, these guys happened to be superstars, but they were my dad's friends, too.
Ed, what about when you're broadcasting? You mentioned earlier about the way the press treated you and the fact that perhaps you were taking up too much space, or what did you know about baseball and you were blind. And people, I guess, you know, don't realize that when you're broadcasting a game and you're hearing it on the radio, it's almost like you're blind because you're hearing it and it's just audible. You can't see anything, but it takes the talent of that broadcaster to describe that. And you were there in that booth doing that. So what did you tell as far as how did you prepare for a game?
Well, in preparing for a game, I would talk to some of the players maybe before the game about the game the day before, the night before, and maybe talk to them about covering a base, say somebody making a double play. And one time one of the Yankee second basemen made an unassisted triple play, which is very unusual, so we talked about that. And now, just in general, finding out, going to the other team and finding out something about the players on the other team. I got to know players on every team in the major leagues, and some of them became some of my best friends on the other team. And listening to the game, I could hear with being able to see, I could visualize the baseball diamond. I could visualize when the bat was swung and hit the ball, and I could hear how hard the ball was hit and where it was sent. So I could tell in that sense where the ball was hit, and sometimes could tell that it was going to be caught, or that was a home run, or it was a ground ball that was going to go through the middle just by the sound of the crack of the bat. Don Mattingly, for instance, was in a very, very bad slump, and he was talking about it. And I said to him, yeah, I know, Danny. I said, you don't have the little sound, the little bing in your swing when you hit the ball. It doesn't sound right. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, I can tell when you're hitting well. He said, well, you let me know when I'm hitting well again. And one day, he just had that bing back in his swing and hitting the ball. And I went to him afterwards, and I told him, I said, the second or third time up, it really sounded good. So he went and he looked at the film and came back and he started hitting, and he always thanks me for getting him out of a slump.
We are visiting with Ed and Chris Lucas. They are the authors of the book Seen Home, The Ed Lucas Story, A Blind Broadcaster's Story of Overcoming Life's Greatest Obstacles. You mention in your book and also in the press release about being able to overcome the anxieties, the fears, and those nuns, the lessons that they taught you in school. And there are other people out there who perhaps are struggling. We hear a lot about veterans coming back, and some of them are struggling because of having to adjust to civilian life, or athletes, or somebody has been in an accident. And you have a foundation, do you not, Ed, to help people?
The foundation is to help the blind,
yes,
and disabled. We go out and we try to help those who are in need. We have a golf tournament every year that will be held on August the 24th in New Jersey. And we have other fundraisers and donations to the EdLucasFoundation.org to help them overcome and be able to do things and become independent. Give them opportunity and independence. That's the most important thing, to let them know that they can do it, not to give up.
Ed, one of the other books that you've written, and I want to get away from the Ed Lucas story, but it's called The New Cold War, Putin's Russia and the Threat to the West. And you actually had an opportunity to meet President Nixon. A lot of people associate, President Nixon with some of the Cold War. And this book, some people say that it's pretty scary. A lot of people say, I thought the Cold War was over. But it's a very interesting book. Would you mind telling us a little bit about that book?
Well, President Nixon, I can tell you more about President Nixon. He was a friend to me. He befriended me. And I wrote an article about Yogi Berra. And it was in the opening day magazine that they gave away at Yankee Stadium. And I was sitting in my press box seat. And right next to us was George Steinbrenner's box, which was all glass. And you could see out into the press box. And while I was sitting in the press box listening to the game, someone came out and tapped me on the shoulder. And he turned around. And I said, yes. He said, Richard Nixon here, Ed. He said, I just want to tell you that I just read your article on Yogi Berra. He said it was very humorous, and you gave me a lot of good laughs. He said it was a very good writing, and I just want to tell you I'm very proud to know you, and keep up the good work. He said, and if you ever need me for anything, I'm always there for you. And I thought that was very nice. I was very touched by that with Mr. President, and he was always very, very nice to me. I had maybe half a dozen to a dozen times that I met him in different occasions at the ballpark.
And I'm glad you mentioned my dad's other work, because that's part of what he does, is that people say, oh, he's just baseball, it's just this. But he's the reason we put this book out now, Seeing Home, is to show people that, no matter what you are facing, my dad is diversified, and you should never let anything get in your way. So not only President Nixon, but he's known four or five different presidents and different celebrities, and they don't just come up to him because he's blind, or as all those reporters said, he's a token handicapped guy. They come because of the person he is and what he projects, and the idea that You know, just like they had to rise to power and they had to deal with struggles and everything, everybody does. Everybody in the world has to do it. And that's my father's message, too, is that you can get where he can get. Ed Lucas is living proof that, you know, you can do anything you put your heart to.
We are visiting with Ed and Christopher Lucas. They are the authors of the book, Seen Home, The Ed Lucas Story, A Blind Broadcaster's Story of Overcoming Life's Greatest Obstacles. Because you talked a little bit about Disney history, and people might say, well, you know what, this story is great, and it sounds like it could be a great inspirational movie or a Disney movie. Any thoughts about that?
Well, there was a script actually written long before the book. We were fortunate. My dad was remarried at home plate at Yankee Stadium, which he was the one and only person ever married at home plate in Yankee Stadium, and that brought a lot of attention. And Penny Marshall, you know, Laverne and Shirley, she came out and she loved the story and she brought it to Hollywood's attention. So there was a script written a couple of years ago and it's been in development, but now the book is sort of fast-forwarded things. So hopefully within the next couple of months, they'll be moving even further ahead and you'll see a movie. And there's a lot of A-list names that have expressed interest in playing my dad, and I'm not allowed to say names. I'll give you a hint. One of them rhymes with Radley Looper, but I can't actually say the name itself. Hopefully you'll see my dad's story up on the big screen in the next year or two.
Well, that's great. So I really enjoyed visiting with your dad and yourself, Ed and Chris Lucas. Before we leave, if you wouldn't mind, Chris and or Ed, give us websites again that people can go to find out more about Seeing Home or some of the other books.
Sure. The best website to go to is seeinghomebook.com, and there's a blog there. There's information about the foundation and, of course, information about ordering the book. Or if you just wanted to get the book directly, it's edlucasonline.com is the best way.
One more question before we leave, Chris. Some people might be interested in perhaps finding out if there are some audio clips of your dad broadcasting out there on the Internet.
If you go onto YouTube, there's a bunch of stuff. If you look up Ed Lucas, about 20 or 30 of his interviews are there online from a diverse, not just baseball, but politics and celebrities all out there. So YouTube is the best resource for that.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Ed, for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Great.
And thank you, Chris.
Thanks.
Visiting with Ed and Chris Lucas, authors of Seen Home, The Ed Lucas Story, A Blind Broadcaster's Story of Overcoming Life's Greatest Obstacles.